Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
BangTheBook.com.
Hello, what's up, everybody? Thank you for joining me here on this Wednesday, February 8th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour or so. Let's go over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Happy to have you with me here for this hump day broadcast. Only able to get one guest on today's show. That will be Wes Reynolds for our Wednesday wagering segment. We'll chat some derivative betting for the NBA, also for college basketball, and then take a look at the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am going on here this weekend. We've got some hellacious weather going on out there at Pebble Beach right now. Well, maybe not today. I haven't checked the weather reports out there today, but lots of wind and rain yesterday. Things very, very difficult out there on the course, so we'll see how things look for the weekend, but we'll chat about that tournament with Wes. It's actually a very unique tournament because the pro-am part comes because you've got professionals and amateurs, 156 of each here in this field. You've got the pros paired with the amateurs, so this is probably putting it in the wrong connotation, so to speak, but you've got some distractions here with this tournament, and this is something that, you know, professional golfers have to deal with here with a pro-am event like this. So we'll see if that factored into Wes's handicapping at all, and we'll get some thoughts from him about that here on today's show. Before I dive into today's topics, I just want to give you an idea of what's coming up here the rest of the week on Bang the Book Radio. Coming up on Thursday, we'll have our 90-minute mega show. We'll start things off with Brad Powers of BradPowersSports.com. Then we'll have our college basketball capping segment with Ralph Michaels of WagerTalk.com. Then we'll wrap things up with Jay Primetown of MMAOddsBreaker.com with a look at UFC 208. So lots of college basketball coming your way tomorrow. Also some UFC coming up on Friday's show. Still waiting to see what happens with our guests. No Rob Pozzola this week. He's got a prior commitment that he needs to tend to, so we won't have him on this week's show. But I can assure you that we'll get some quality guests, or I don't know, maybe we'll have a quality host talk for a little while on Friday's show. But I promise you, we'll set you up for success here as we head into the weekend. A few things I want to mention as well. Head on over to bangthebook.com. Take advantage of all the great content that we have over there. Sportsbook reviews, very, very important. You know, you want to make sure that you feel comfortable with where you're putting your money. As you know, we stump for DSI Sportsbook here on this show. Our Bang the Book Radio listeners can use the promo code BTB Radio. They'll get you a $10 free bet just for signing up, an additional 50 to 100% deposit bonus based on the amount of your initial deposit. We don't just do that to hear ourselves talk. We do it because we have a lot of confidence in that sportsbook, in the people running it, part of that Chris family of books. So you know that they're reputable. You know that you're going to get fair prices, good odds. You know, that's really all you want. You know, and there's a lot of deposit and withdrawal options. Of course, you can use Bitcoin for both if you want to. You know, there are a lot of different ways to go about funding your account, and then also taking your winnings out of your account, which, as we know, always the most important thing is to be able to get that money back out if you put it in. So DSI Sportsbook, our recommended place for that. But maybe you already have an account over at DSI, or maybe for whatever reason you've heard some negative things. We've got all kinds of sportsbook reviews over at bangthebook.com. Exclusive promo codes for each and every one of those outlets, so you can definitely take advantage of those. Again, you want to make sure that you're shopping around for the best prices with everything that you do. I'll talk about that here again in a few minutes. But we got college basketball futures. We've got all kinds of stuff. Major League Baseball futures, season win totals will be coming out soon. So, you know, hey, those wins are important in baseball, and those half points and full points and those cents on the money line, all of that stuff, very, very important to your bottom line. We've talked a lot here recently about bankroll management and how important that is. We want to make sure that our listeners, who are largely handicappers out there, can transition themselves into being bettors as well. You have to set yourself up for success from a money management standpoint. That's what we've been talking about here a lot on some of these recent shows. And I think that's all really important stuff. You know, I imagine some of our listeners out there tune in hoping to hear free picks and free plays and all that type of thing. And of course, We do have those with our handicappers and our professional bettors that come on the show. We talk about games with the writers that we have on the show. But I've always wanted, I've talked about this before, and I will continue to talk about this until we no longer have a show, whenever that may be. But I wanted this show to be educational and informative and help you be able to be as self-sustainable as possible when it comes to this industry. And one of the big things, one of the big learning curves is bankroll management. So I want to make sure that our listeners have a good grasp on those types of topics. And that's why we talk about things like that, why we will continue to talk about things like that and continue to talk about some of those nuts and bolts of the industry. Look, a lot of people can handicap games. A lot of people can interpret data. A lot of people can look at matchups and all those types of things. And some people obviously have more success with that than others. But where you really make your money in this industry is by adhering to proper bankroll management. You know, like we heard yesterday, even if you go 60%, if you're putting too much of your bankroll in play, you're eventually going to go broke. You're going to hit one of those swings of negative variance, and that's going to be it. You're going to have to reload. And the goal here for our listeners on this show is that they never have to reload. You know, certainly if you have to, you have to, and it is what it is, and it can be a learning experience for you. We want to help you build those bankrolls, even if it's incrementally, even if it's just very small. You know, hey, as long as you're going in the right direction, you can start increasing a little bit from there. So, you know, lots of great stuff here recently on Bang the Book Radio, and always great stuff over at bangthebook.com. The matchup data that we have for the games is absolutely phenomenal. If you're a trends bettor, all that stuff is in there. We've got per game statistics, season results, ATS records, all kinds of great stuff in that matchup data section. We've got game previews contributed by a handful of different writers here. So use all that stuff to your advantage. You know, I mean, maybe you're on the fence about a game. Maybe you see something over at bangthebook.com that pushes you over the edge. Hey, that's great. Maybe you see something over at bangthebook.com that keeps you off of a play or gives you a different perspective. That's great too. So head on over there, take advantage of everything. Information is power in the sports betting industry. So the more perspectives you can get, the better off you're going to be. Now, I sent a call out this morning here on our at Bang the Book Twitter account, and that is at Bang the Book, looking for some listener questions. I thought this would be a good time to do this. Like I said, only one guest able to make the broadcast here today. You know, it's kind of a little bit of a slow week overall with people coming down off of that Super Bowl hangover and, you know, Valentine's Day is coming up. So maybe they got some plans with that. Maybe people are planning their summer vacations, whatever the case may be. So I thought it would be a good opportunity to hear from our listeners, see if they had some questions that I could answer here. And really for me, it was twofold, because one of the things I really like is that when we get listener questions, I can get those different perspectives from all of our handicappers. So these will probably be some things that I can carry over a little bit into future discussions as well. And, you know, see if we can come up with some things that work for you. But the first question I got here this morning was from Wendell on Twitter at Wendell_11. Asking, what is your routine on deciding whether to bet on someone or something, or is it just kind of a gut feeling and then do your research? Well, I'm going to promote something that I do over at bangthebook.com starting out, and that's my situational betting article, which I put up every Sunday for both the NHL and the NBA. Now, what I do in that article is I take a look at the schedule and isolate games that look like they could be potential plays. Now, of course, if you're doing this on Sunday and you're looking at games on Thursday and Friday, a lot may have changed. Players may have gotten injured. You know, maybe there was some sort of travel snafu. The weather got bad. A team was stuck, you know, overnight in one city a little bit longer than they should have been. Couldn't come back home. Couldn't get to their next destination. These types of things happen. So not everything written about in those situational articles is something that I would endorse as a play. However, that is a starting point for me because I am very situationally based when it comes to the NHL and the NBA, because you've got these daily winter sports here. Teams are playing three games in four nights, back to backs, five and or four and six. The Sabres this week, for example, the NHL play five games in seven nights. You rarely see that in the NHL, but you do have that case here this week, five games in eight nights, all those types of things. And one of the things I've been talking about, and actually this is something that Kyle Hunter pointed me to, and maybe this is something we can incorporate into one of our Handicapping the Hardwood segments here in the coming weeks, is that when it comes to the NHL, rested teams versus teams without rest, it's one of the biggest advantages in professionals. If you look at how the data has been tracked over the years, It's something that's a really significant edge. So that's a starting point for me, at least as it pertains to the NHL and the NBA. And certainly you can find situational spots in college basketball as well. You know, sometimes they're not as prevalent because teams really only play twice a week, but those opportunities are out there for you. But that's really the starting point for me, is I look at those games where I feel like I have an edge based on the situation. Now, I'm a little bit different from the guests that we have on the show here. You know, they're all, not all of them, but a lot of them are professional handicappers, and then some of them are also professional bettors that make a living at betting. I don't do that, obviously. My job is bangthebook.com. My job is to provide content, both on this show and then also written content. So I don't have power ratings for every sport like all these other guys do. I do them for college football, and then I do a lot of analytics study when it comes to baseball. But when it comes to the sports that are currently going on, like I said, a lot of it is situationally based. So I have a price point in mind where I feel comfortable with a game. And usually they're pretty close. I mean, it's not a scientific approach, obviously, because I don't have big models and I don't have a bunch of back-tested data. But what I do have is a working knowledge of the industry. I watch the markets every single day so that I can talk about things here on the show, so I can compare notes with our handicappers, you know, of course, reach out to them in private and get their thoughts on some of these games as well. So I have an idea of where I think prices should open up. And as you know, if you've read some of my NHL previews or maybe my NBA previews where we didn't have an overnight line, sometimes I'm off by quite a bit. Sometimes your numbers are going to be off. It's just going to be the way that it is. Sometimes those become value sides for me. Sometimes they don't. But really my routine is to start with that when it comes to, you know, the NHL and the NBA, is to look at the situation, see if it fits the criteria that I'm looking for, then start to look at the price. If the price fits what I'm looking at, then it's something that I take an extra look at, do a little bit more research, check into the injury situations, all that type of thing. Now, when it comes to baseball, for example, and I'll be talking a lot of baseball here over the next several months on Bang the Book Radio, for me, it's all analytics-based. And I do regression analysis handicapping because I believe in sabermetrics. So I will study the sabermetrics. I very heavily weigh starting pitcher matchups, you know, just because, I mean, the starting pitcher is working, in a general sense, 5 or 6 innings of a 9-inning game. So they're going to have the biggest impact on that game. And once you get to the bullpens, there's a lot of variance. You know, you sort of have to rely on how managers are deploying their assets and, you know, all these types of things. So I really focus heavily on the starting pitchers, look for price opportunities there in that respect. When it comes to college football, you know, college football, it's a little bit easier because you have a much greater idea of where the lines are going to be. You know that the key numbers are certainly of utmost importance, and that's something I'll talk about here in a couple of minutes. For football, it's just a little bit easier. You know, I think football, for a lot of people, our listeners included, it's just kind of second nature. You know, you know the matchups, whether you play fantasy football, full season or daily. You know the players, you know the teams, all that type of thing. You know, for me, with so much going on during the day, you know, it's a lot easier to focus on those once-a-week games where teams are just playing once, as opposed to the daily leagues where teams are playing 3-4 times a week. So that's why, for me, it's a little bit different based on the different sports, the different markets. But there are some gut feelings in there. I mean, you have to have intuition as a handicapper. And, you know, I know that some of our guests would probably disagree with me a little bit there because they take more of an analytics approach. They want more of a quantifiable edge. And I can certainly understand that. For me, though, you know, I think that there is some intuition that goes into it. I think that, you know, sometimes you try to put yourself in the mindset of an athlete on those teams. And I mean, I didn't play anything after high school, but from studying some of the sports psychology things and studying circadian rhythm and all that type of stuff, I feel like I have a pretty decent feel for those types of situations. So that's what it is for me at this time of the year. And I sort of talked about what I do in a lot of the other markets there. But even still, even if I have a game, I'm going to go back to an example prior to the All-Star break with the San Jose Sharks. Now, they were in a really, really difficult spot a couple of times, actually. The one time they were playing their 5th game in 8 nights. The other time they were playing their 6th game in 9 nights. Now, both of those games, to me, were spots to play against San Jose. The first one, they were playing against Winnipeg on the road. Now, Winnipeg was in a pretty good spot last night, too, against Minnesota. They lost that game, didn't play well. But that game against Winnipeg on January 24th, San Jose had won five straight. It was a fifth game in eight nights. It was a back-to-back with the first game played in Colorado. So it was played in the high altitude. So I thought Winnipeg was a great look there in that game. Winnipeg actually outshot San Jose 34-26, lost the game 4-3. It happens. You know, but I did my research. I had my foundation where I wanted to look at that game because the situation played out, dug into it a little bit more, even got San Jose playing its backup goaltender. It was a golden opportunity. It just didn't work out. Now, I faded San Jose again on Thursday night against Edmonton because it was the sixth game in nine nights. They were back at home, game right before the All-Star break. Edmonton's head coach used to be San Jose's head coach, Todd McClellan, so I figured the Oilers would really step up in that game for him. San Jose, in some respects, outplayed Edmonton, but the Oilers came away with a 4-1 win. But that was also a good spot from a price standpoint because Edmonton was in about the plus 150 range, I think, at some of the books out there. I think it closed plus 140 or plus 145, something like that. But you get the spot, then you start to look at the price. That's how I do it. You know, other people will just have their lines, compare them against what the sports books have put out, and that's what they go with. And that's one of the things I love about this industry and one of the things I love about having this show is that we get all of these different perspectives. We get this chance to hear how other people do it. And as long as you're profitable, I'm going to say this, there are inherent caveats to saying this, but as long as you're profitable, do what works for you. You know, as long as your long-term profitability looks good, do what works for you. So that's what works for me. May not work for other people, but hopefully, Wendell, I answered your question a very long-winded way there. And you know, hopefully you took something out of what I was talking about there and maybe found something that could work for you. We had a couple of questions here from Garrett at Butch Wolf Thorn on Twitter. Couple here. When you talk about placing a bet in units, is that how much you risk or how much you win? So the easiest way to answer this for me is to say that what I prefer to do and what a lot of people I think prefer to do is you want to win one unit. Now, in order to do that, of course, with the standard minus 110 VIG, you have to bet 1.1 units on a game, 11 to 10, 110 to 100. 1,100 to 1,000. For me, I think it just makes it easier to do it that way. So you want to play to win one unit or play to win two units, where, of course, you'd bet 2.2 units. So $22 to win 20, 220 to win 200, whatever the case may be. So that's the way that I interpret units. And actually, it was interesting. I had this discussion with Brad Powers. And actually, then I sent SportsCheat a follow-up question because I was kind of surprised by the answer. Because I asked Brad, I said, you know, because I actually wrote up a piece overpayingthebook.com in terms of bankroll management, and I talked about this with unit sizing. And I said, how many people do you think bet one unit to win effectively 0.909 units is what it really comes out to. So 0.91 units versus betting 1.1 units to win one unit. And he thought it was about 50-50. And I was kind of surprised by that. I sort of just thought that everybody kind of took the 11 to 10 approach, liked winning those round numbers, but apparently, you know, maybe it's a little bit more split than I thought. So, Garrett, to answer your question, when you talk about placing a bet in units, I do it implication that you're betting 1.1 to win one, 2.2 to win two, 3.3 to win three, etc. You know, but for some other people, you know, they may just be betting that flat unit size to win 0.9 units. So, it's really all up to you and how you feel comfortable with doing it. But that's the way that I look at doing it is to, you know, make it easy to round it off. And the nice thing too, is that a lot of the online sports books out there, you know, you can bet, you can either put your amount in the risk amount box or the win amount box. So if you want to win one unit, you just put, you know, win $10 and it's going to risk 11. You know, if you put risk 11, it'll win 10. If you put risk 10, it'll win 9, you know, 0.91 units or whatever it is. So that's the way that I look at it. But of course, you know, whatever works for you, I mean, your view may vary on that, but that's what I'm talking about in terms of unit sizes. I generally think of it as winning a full unit as opposed to winning the 0.91 units. But like I said, I mean, there's really no discernible difference to it necessarily. it is what it is. So that's what I'm talking about when we talk about unit size betting. The other question that Garrett had to ask here, and this one's really, really interesting and in-depth and can be very detailed. This is something I'm going to talk about with Sports Cheetah on next week's show, because Cheetah is exactly the right guy to ask this question to. I'll answer it to the best of my ability, which may leave something to be desired a little bit. But the question that Garrett asked here is buying points off the line profitable? And this is a very multifaceted, multi-layered answer. So when it comes to buying points, obviously, you know, we know about key numbers. And if you don't know about key numbers, I wrote about them a little bit over at bangthebook.com. There's a how-to section. Actually, if you go over to the website, and I'll pull this up here as I'm talking, you can go into the sports tab and then go down to sports betting and then articles. And there's some articles there that are some introductory type of things. There's a little bit more advanced type of stuff there as well. But I've got an article about key numbers in the NFL for sports betting. And you know, when you talk about buying points, if you buy from 5 to 5.5 in the NFL, it clearly does nothing for you. You know, it's really not all that valuable. I guess I shouldn't say that, because now with missed extra points and stuff, some of the other numbers that weren't key beforehand have gotten a little bit more important now that extra points aren't automatic. But really, going from 5 to 5.5 doesn't do you a whole lot of good. Going from 5.5 to 6 doesn't do you a whole lot of good. Now, when you talk about the key numbers, you talk about buying off of 3, whether you're buying down to 2.5 or up to 3.5, it can be profitable. There are times where it's plus EV, plus expected value to do that. Now, of course, you want to do it when the juice is in your favor. A lot of sports books will punish you for buying off of those key numbers. Sometimes it'll be, you know, 10 cents to buy from 5 to 5.5, but it'll be 20 or 25 cents to buy from 3 to 3.5. So really it's all about the math. And actually the best thing I can tell you here in terms of looking this up is if you go to Google and you look up buying points in sports betting, Wizard of Odds, which is a great site. Michael Shackelford used to run it. I think he actually sold it now to somebody. And if you follow him on Twitter, he just travels all over the world now with the money that he's got. But there's a chart in there that talks about the actual value of buying and selling half points, full points, and 1.5 off of numbers in the NFL from plus 14 to minus 14. So that's a really good resource for you to have, because you're going to be able to see, you know, when it's in your best interest to buy. And you have to keep in mind here too, and I don't want to completely derail the question, but if you have the ability to shop around to different sports books, realistically speaking, you shouldn't have to buy points all that often, if at all. Because if you have more than one sports book at your disposal, preferably 3 or 4, odds are you're going to find the number that you're looking for. If you want a 6.5, you'll probably get it somewhere. If you have a wide array of books, you know, if you have maybe a sharper book, obviously Pinnacle is the sharpest book out there, and no U.S. players can play there anymore unless they had an account previously. You know, Pinnacle's very sharp. So, you know, you're going to have underdogs and unders shaded a little bit. If you're at Bovada, for example, the favorites and the overs are going to be shaded. If you're at Five Dimes, it's kind of a split. There's a lot of public action there because they offer so many different prop or futures opportunities. But also there's a lot of sharp players there too, you know, the ones that haven't had their accounts blacklisted or anything like that. So, you know, you want to make sure that you have a wide array of outs at your disposal. And if you do, you should be able to get your target numbers to the point where you don't have to buy points. Now, if you do want to buy points, you know, you got to keep some things in mind here. Of course, as I said, you know, you're going to pay a higher premium buying off of 7 or buying off of 3 in the NFL. There's no doubt about that. Another thing is, while there are some standard mathematical values for buying from a 7 to a 7.5, for example, keep this in mind as well. When you talk about buying points, not all half points are created equal. And what I mean by that is a half point in a football game with a total of 35, in a college football game with 35, you know, say Boston College is playing, because they don't score any points, but they play pretty good defense. Going from 7 to 7.5 is going to be a lot more valuable in a game like that than in a Baylor Texas Tech game where the total is 85.5. That's just, you know, it's one of those things that you can overlook. It seems like it's really obvious, and when you hear it, you go, well, yeah, no shit, obviously. But it is something that you can overlook a little bit, And that is one of the important distinctions to make here about buying points. Another example is, let's say you want to buy points in the NBA. Now, I will admit I'm not as brushed up on that as I probably should be. That's something I'll talk about with Cheetah next week because he's a big-time NBA guy. But it just stands to reason that if you want to buy a half point and take a game from 5.5 to 6 and the total is 189 or 190, that's going to be a lot more valuable to you than if the total is 220, you know, because there's a wider variance with the more points you're expected to get in a game. So that's another important thing to keep in mind here about buying half points and full points. It can be profitable, but also I think you can limit some of that exposure by having multiple sports books at your disposal. I mean, think about it. You know, if you've got a flat line at a -110, that's what flat means, -110, the standard VIG, you know, your break even point, as we've talked about here in recent shows, is 52.38% to, you know, let's say 115. You know, then you start to talk about a much higher, you know, success rate to where you break even. It's somewhere in the 53.5 range, I think, something like that. You know, it in a lot of ways, you can almost say it goes up about a percentage point with every 5 cents of juice. That's a very oversimplified way to look at it. Don't quote me on that because that's obviously not the exact number. But for those that don't have time to do the math or maybe don't have one of those charts in front of them, you know, as you go up in VIG, your break-even point gets a lot higher. So if you've got a standard -110, you play it up to -120, you know, that's something that's going to be – that's something you have to weigh the risk-reward of. You know, is it worth it to go to a -120, have to hit 54.5% to break even? You know, that's an element of bankroll management. That's an element of being able to understand and maximize your value. Everything in this industry boils down to math. And math can be, you know, challenging for a lot of people. And I will admit, I'm not great at math. It's something that I struggle with here in this industry and something I've actually been reaching out to get a lot of help with as we've gone into some of these more detailed handicapping topics. But it's just, there's also some common sense in play too. You know, if you're laying -120 instead of -110, you know your break-even point is higher. So you have to ask yourself, am I willing to, you know, put myself in this position to buy a half point? And that's a decision that you have to make, you know, and sometimes it can be more valuable than others. I really don't think that buying points in college football is a great idea. College basketball, you know, it's so tough this year because this year is so unique. We've had so many upsets and so many crazy things that have gone on. But there are times when buying half points and full points can be profitable. But also, like I said, I think that you can limit some of your exposure in doing that just simply by having the ability to shop around for different prices and take that away. And look, you know, another thing about it too is that a lot of times shopping around for that different price, the half point's already built in there. You know, keep that in mind. I mean, you look at the juice at some of these different sports books here, and I'll see if I can pull up an example from tonight's card. But, you know, you get into these situations where sides are shaded. You know, let's take Denver and Atlanta, for example, here tonight in the NBA. The Greek showing 4 flat, BetOnline showing 4 flat, Bookmaker showing 4 flat. But DSI has Denver +4.5, -115. So an extra 5 cents of juice there. You know, you don't normally see -120s in basketball. Usually go -115 and then go up a half point to the next number. You know, you see these a lot more in football. Take the Super Bowl, for example. You know, you didn't see any 2.5s out there, but you saw 3, you know, -105, 3, -120. I think that was the number at Bovada for a while. You know, there are different VIGs out there. And, you know, if you're catching 3 at even money and you can play 2.5 -120, you know, that's a risk reward thing that you can look to play. For example, that was something that Cheetah did. He played -2, -2.5, -119 at Pinnacle, I think, on New England. And, you know, that was a bet where mathematically it lined up for him where he had enough of an edge to justify making that play. But not all books are like Pinnacle. Not everybody offers, you know, 10 cents on a half point off a key number or 20 cents off a key number. So a lot of books are 25 and 30 cents. So, you know, as you do that, your break-even percentage goes up quite a bit. So long story short, and I think this is a great question, and I'll try to get a little bit more clarification on the math with Sports Cheeto, and then Rob Pozzolo would be a good guy to ask about this as well. It can be profitable. For me personally, it's something that I try to avoid because I talk all the time about shopping around for the best prices, and usually you can find the target price that you're looking for, but it can be profitable, and it is something if you want to do it, as long as you're doing it when it makes sense mathematically and from a VIG standpoint, you know, go ahead and do it. So three really good questions here for today's show. This is something I'll try to do a little bit more with this mailbag segment, and hopefully the two listeners that asked those questions got something out of it. And of course, hopefully the people that didn't ask questions but got to hear me talk for a half hour got something out of it as well, because all of this stuff is, it's really, really fascinating. It's very, very important to comprehend. And hey, that's what separates our show. Other shows are just going to be guys that stand up on a soapbox and tout their plays and tout their picks and all that. That's not what we do here. We try to help set you up for success. And we have guys that sell premium selections, and they talk about them at the end of the segments. And you know, if you want to go and buy them, that's fine. If you don't, that's fine too. We certainly hope that you support the people we have on the show. You go and read what our writers have written. You know, pay attention to what the professional handicappers are doing. But we want you to be able to have success with this. And that's why, even though some of this bankroll management stuff, even though some of this stuff on the betting side maybe gets a little bit tedious for some people, or maybe gets a little bit monotonous, excuse me, I hope that it's stuff that you do apply, that you do put into practice, and do wind up having success with, because ultimately that's my end goal as the host of this show, is that I want everybody out there to improve as both a handicapper and as a bettor. And to improve as a bettor, you have to be able to ask yourself some of these questions and also know what the answers to those questions are. We've got one guest here for today's show. Go ahead and bring him on the air now. That is Wes Reynolds at Wes Reynolds, the number one on Twitter. Wes, how's it going today, man?
Hey, Adam. How are you?
Doing very well. Appreciate your time as always, sir. Thank you so much for joining us. Let's start with college basketball and the NBA here. I know that we'll talk a lot about the Pebble Beach Pro-Am, and it seems like weather could be a factor there out on the West Coast this week. But we've been talking about bankroll management techniques, and I was talking about, I had a listener question today about buying points on the line and whether or not it's profitable and some of these other things. But I wanted to revisit a topic that you and I talked about earlier in the basketball seasons here, and that's derivative betting. And with the rash of upsets we've seen in college basketball, with some of the fourth quarter comebacks we've seen in the NBA where teams aren't able to keep these big leads and cover numbers as big favorites, I feel like you have to be paying more attention to the first and second half market.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, that's where I find I do a little bit better. I mean, you can see them almost every night as I pull last night's results up. You know, if you look at some of these teams, especially if you're getting a true round robin in conference play, or it's, you know, put together, even if it's not a true round robin where a team is playing twice, unless a team is really overmatched, sometimes you can look at the previous matchup of a team and take the first half. And I noticed last night there were quite a few first halves that covered from the team that was defeated the time before. One example was Florida and Georgia last night. Georgia played Florida very tough down to the wire, didn't get the win. They caught Florida off the win over Kentucky and were able to cover the first half, but not necessarily the game. I think the first half spread was like +3. They ended up only being down 2 at the half, and then they didn't cover necessarily the full game. You also saw that and that usually works better in a dog roll, but you also saw it in a favorite roll where a team, Michigan, had lost a tight one at Michigan State in the first meeting, and then they came out and just ran away from Michigan State. The second half was pretty even, but I believe we're up 26 at the half. And so you're seeing some of these games here where if you get like a rematch a first half isn't necessarily the worst bet in the world. And, you know, seems to be getting there. I don't have approximate numbers on it, but seems to be getting there more often than not.
Well, and it's really interesting you bring up the college basketball example, because a lot of these teams do play each other twice in conference play, and sometimes they'll play each other a third time in the conference tournament. And obviously the venue changes in the regular season because you play one at home and one on the road. So, you know, different shooting backdrops, certainly a possibility that you get a different type of outcome. Is that an angle that you've looked at here more this year, or is that something that you've had, you know, incorporated throughout your time as a handicapper?
You know, it's something I guess I've looked at over time. And I mean, there's various situations and there's various things that you have to incorporate with that. Like that Florida-Georgia example, you had Florida coming off their biggest win over the year where they really drilled Kentucky in the featured game on Saturday night in front of a national TV audience. So, you know, that is something that I think was certainly incorporated with that. I split on that game because a lot of times I'll take the first half and the game, you know, sometimes doing that with maybe the possible, not necessarily intention, but at least the option of playing back the other side in the second half, because that's one of those things, I think we might have talked about it in the past, where, you know, sometimes if you're a little uneasy or a little unsure and you cover that first half, you can at least play back the other side and lock in 2-1 on the game, which, you know, if it's a one-unit play, I mean, you know, the worst you'll do is maybe a 2-1, a .9 profit on an individual game. And sometimes there's nothing wrong with locking in a profit if you're unsure about a game. So that's something that, you know, that you sometimes look to do. And then with totals, it's a little trickier, but, you know, there's always the possibilities of middles and trying, where it almost works is what I'd call like a hedge middle, where you're hedging, but you're kind of hoping to get a middle. Now, usually that's only going to be a few points. I mean, you're not going to have something maybe like a 20-point middle very often, where it's almost worth it to give it a try and see if you can go 3-0 on the game. But worst case scenario, it loses, you know, and you go 2-1 on the game. So, you know, that's something I think over time that you look at a little bit, especially in conference play, probably when the numbers are a lot more tight.
No, I think what we need to talk about here is that you're very unique in the sense that you are an extremely high volume handicapper. You will be playing second halves all night long. You'll have first half and pregame positions as well. Is this still a strategy that you would suggest to flat bettors that are maybe a little bit more selective?
Yeah, I think probably, especially, I mean, I always say to myself, I wish I was a little more selective, and I actually at sometimes try to be. I mean, it's a little bit hard on a Saturday when you have 150-some games, it seems like, on the board. But, you know, I think selectivity, you know, is good, but I don't think it's ever really necessarily good to just say, well, I'm only going to play two plays a day. Because you don't know. I mean, maybe you like 7 or 8 games. Maybe some days you don't like anything. And I mean, like Monday, I didn't necessarily play anything. I had a couple, you know, personal things that came up, but I ended up not playing anything on Monday night. And it's probably a good thing I didn't, because my leans I didn't think didn't end up being very good. So, I mean, in terms of the volume, I mean, you know, what works for me might not work for somebody else, or what doesn't work for me might work for somebody else. So, I mean, there's no real right answer, but I think if you're kind of getting started, it's probably not the best idea to play a ton of volume, because you really got to have some knowledge of the teams and kind of looking at the market moves and you know, ascertaining and kind of thinking to yourself why a line is moving a certain way on a given game. So, you know, it's not something I recommend to somebody that's like just starting out, but I think over time, as you get experience and you learn some things, you know, kind of learn some things about game flow and then incorporate that with line movements, looking at different, some of the fundamental angles, if a team's got a big game coming up or if they're off a big win, and just incorporating that all together. And then that gives you, I think, a good base to go forward doing that if you so choose to play volume.
Now, I know that you've historically done better with college basketball, and the NBA is just such a really tough nut to crack. I mean, there are a lot of things that you have to consider, and it's just one of those leagues that's tough to beat. But do you find that taking that same approach of looking at first half, second halves, maybe taking a first half and a game, trying to get that hedge middle that you were talking about, is that a strategy that translates well to the NBA too, or is it something that you find, you know, works better with college hoops?
It translates at times. I mean, when you talk about volume, the volume is going to be much smaller on the NBA, obviously, because there's less teams and there's less games on the board on any given night. But I think a lot more with the NBA, you have to incorporate the scheduling dynamics into that. If a team is coming maybe in their first game home off a long road trip, or it's the last game on a long road trip and they've already got a guarantee in terms of, let's say a team's playing a five-game road trip and they've already got 3-1. So they know that they're going to have a winning trip no matter what. Or if it's a four-game, they know they're going to get their split. Sometimes the team just doesn't have their leg, especially if they're playing like their fourth game in 5 nights or fourth game in 6 nights. You know, you'll know right away if a team doesn't have their leg. So, I mean, you have to incorporate, I think, the scheduling dynamics with that. And then something I like to do in terms of these half bettings, especially second halves, if you look at the game total and these two teams have played two big over quarters in the first half, I might like to go look under for the second half. If you see the team that's maybe it was 64 points in the first quarter and 58 in the second quarter, you know, then you might look to go under. Maybe they'll put a total out depending on what the number was at the beginning of the game, like something like 106 or 107. And then you're looking at, well, they scored 122 in the first half, so they're easily going to score 106. And oftentimes you see one real low-scoring quarter in the second half where they might score 46 or something, and then they need 60 in the fourth quarter to beat you. So, I mean, you know, NBA is a lot weirder dynamic in terms of that, because so much of it is just the way the schedule is set up and the different angles that come into play if a team's on a back-to-back. It's not like the college game where pretty much if you're in a certain conference, if you're in the Pac-12, you're going to play Thursday, Saturday, or Wednesday, Saturday. You know, you don't really have that necessarily in the NBA. So that's where I think it's kind of different.
Well, I think there's one really good example from last night, and then we'll flip over to the golf side and talk about Pebble Beach, but Brooklyn and Charlotte. So Charlotte came in having lost 7 straight. It was their first home game after a West Coast swing. They went to Portland, Golden State, and Utah, and they were up 17 at the break. And everyone's thinking, okay, great, they're going to cover this 10. And that was a number that kind of moved around a little bit during the day. It was as low as 9.5, open 10.5. But it kind of settled there in that 10 range, and people are thinking they're looking pretty good. Well, Charlotte only won the game by 4. They kind of put it in cruise control a little bit in the second half, quit playing defense. Brooklyn scored 70 points. Charlotte's got Houston coming up tomorrow night. But those are the things that you want to look for in the NBA, where Charlotte had lost 7 straight. They're playing a terrible team. They knew it. So Charlotte in the first half was the right play, as opposed to asking them to cover a double-digit number.
Yeah. Usually, when you come back off that West Coast road trip or if it's a Western team, an East Coast road trip, when you come back off that, that's usually a play against in that first game because the players are kind of behind on life, so to speak, in the fact that they have, even though they're wealthy and they're making a ton of money, you have to pay bills, catch up on phone messages, catch up on your mail, do different things. And usually when you're a home team, you know, you have different obligations. You know, hey, we've got a charity or we've got some kind of kids coming, so you got to sign, you know, there might be a promotion, you got to sign balls, or you got to sign autographed posters or different little things, and you have different obligations, you know, when you're playing at home than rather when you're playing on the road or you got some kind of media thing you have to do. So, you know, you get all of that you have to catch up on, all of this stuff that outside of basketball, outside of actually playing the game and doing the shoot around, getting your stretches, getting any stuff you need in terms of dealing with the trainer. So that's where that comes into play, because you've got so much focus that you could put on basketball, but you got to focus on the ancillary stuff as well. And that's oftentimes why you see a team that might, you know, come home where it's like, okay, we're finally home, we're finally off this road trip, and they don't really come out with their best effort in that first game back.
Well, let's move over to the golf side of things here, because we've got a really, really unique and very interesting event coming up this weekend. The Pebble Beach Pro-Am. This is a massive, massive field. 156 pros, 156 amateurs, three different courses again, which is something we see a lot here early on in the golf season, both because of the bigger fields, also because you want to make sure that you're getting in everything that you need to here over the first couple of rounds before you start to get a cut. What is your starting point with this tournament at Pebble Beach? Because like I said, it's so unique. There are a lot more distractions for the players, whether they're playing with somebody that's an entertainer who's maybe going to be jovial and lighthearted, or playing with an athlete who's going to, you know, want to go out there and compete well, because athletes just can't turn that side of their brains off. What do you look at here as a starting point?
I think in terms of a starting point, because it is a unique event, you do have to look a little bit at past form in terms of guys that play the event more regularly or have experience playing the event. That doesn't mean you ignore first-timers. I mean, one guy that we'll talk about in a minute, Justin Rose, played his first time here last year and finished sixth and actually was in contention to win, and that had two bogeys on the 18th, which is a par 5 there at Pebble Beach on the weekend, which really kind of spoiled his chances to win. But you're looking, I think, at past form, and then you look at the usual angles in terms of the courses, you know, the Poa Nui greens, which you're going to see on all three of the courses, and, you know, different things like green speed, difficulty of the course, all the usual angles that we talk about, because it is such a big field. And you have, you know, a fair amount of players here that don't really have a chance to win. I mean, you're looking at some of the guys in the field, like a Neil Lancaster or somebody like that gets into this field. Just kind of look at the bottom of the odds board. Some older players, Neil Lancaster or Ray Otis or David Duvall, maybe guys that are playing kind of part-time, I mean, they're probably not going to win this event. So it's a lot bigger field than normal, so you can ignore, I think, some players. And some people just like to do it because it's different. It's a different format, and that's why some people – don't play it, because maybe they don't want to deal with the pro-am aspect of it. It is the same thing with Phoenix last week. I mean, that crowd is great and it's raucous. Some guys might not be comfortable playing that, so they take that week off. So I usually go with just kind of the traditional starting points that I would with most tournaments, looking at past form, looking at recent form, and course history and the like.
Now, one of the things that we've noticed here early on in the golf season is that we've had a lot, and even this even goes back to the wraparound portion, we've had a lot of courses early on that really play to the long hitters. We've played some monster courses here so far. These three are not. In fact, all three of them under 7,000 yards, but they all present a lot of different challenges. And I mean, we know about Pebble Beach. You think about some of the iconic holes here on this golf course, of course, right up against the ocean, very windy. This is a, this is a really, really tough course. So what sorts of players were you looking for here this week?
It was really kind of a mix of players. I really looked a lot more at the greens, Poa Nua, and I had a couple guys that I think are pretty solid wind players, because I think the first 2 days you're going to see some wind. It's gotten a lot of rain here in the last month. I think the weather is going to be more of an effect on Thursday and Friday necessarily than it is on the weekend. The links are relatively similar, all just under 7,000 yards, all Poa Nuas. If you look at the courses in terms of the average last year, they were actually very close. Spyglass was the toughest by like a hundredth of a point, basically. Averaged 72.51 last year. Pebble averaged 72.5. And the Monterey Peninsula averaged 70.7. So they all ranked well in terms of difficulty. And then if you go back the year before, by far the easiest was Monterey Peninsula, which averaged a 68.9, so two under par for an average round. So you look at just kind of the course difficulty over the years and average it out, probably the most difficult of the course is Spyglass Hill, then followed by Pebble Beach, and then Monterey is probably the easiest. But so much of it is weather here. I mean, it's usually going to be sunny, but it's usually going to be a little bit chilly. You're not seeing guys wear the short sleeve shirt. You're seeing guys wear sweaters and pullovers. And I mean, it's not going to be the warmest. It's going to be a little chilly out there. And there's always some wind, but it looks like the wind could be really beating these guys down Thursday and Friday, though.
So one guy that you mentioned already by name, we'll talk about him a little bit more here. The smallest price you've got on the board, Justin Rose, you got him at 14-1. Looking around the market here, there's a plus 1567 out there at DSI. He's down to 12-1 at Five Dimes. So again, shop around for the best prices there. But he's playing with Justin Timberlake, a guy he played with last year, and Timberlake's actually a pretty solid golfer.
Yeah, he's actually listed as a 4 handicap, and I don't know how true these handicaps are. I was actually talking about that last night on Twitter, but I've seen him play, and he is actually a very solid player, and they seem to get along very well. Last year was actually Justin Rose's first time playing this event. He finished 6th and probably had a real good look at winning. Mickelson actually was in the best position and then missed that 4-footer for par on 18, and Vaughn Taylor ended up winning as a big long shot. But I think he's pretty comfortable. He's went through this once now. And I also think Justin Rose has done something very unique with his schedule this year. He's not playing a lot in Europe to start the year. And you know, he resides mostly full-time now in the Bahamas. So I think you're seeing him play a little bit more stateside this year. And if you look at how he finished, he finished fourth and second in his two events that have played. I mean, he's got as good a form as anybody without winning. He was 4th in San Diego 2 weeks ago, and then he was a distant second, albeit, because Justin Thomas just kind of set the world on fire at the Sony. But two really good starts, made 25 birdies at that first event at Wailea, and then two eagles and 15 birdies at Torrey Pines over a 4-day span. I mean, that's pretty solid play right there. And I also think if you incorporate the wind, I think Justin Rose, having played a lot on the European Tour and having played a lot, being from England, has played in a lot of windy conditions. So I don't think these are going to affect him as much as it might some of the other guys that are kind of at the top of the market this week. He has really played well, and I think knocking on the door for a win, and there's certainly arguments to be made for the guys at the top, Dustin Johnson being a former winner, Jordan Spieth being that he's off to a pretty good start, even though he only finished tied for 10th last week. But I think Rose, of all those guys kind of in that top five, top six of the market, probably has the best value here.
Justin Timberlake pisses me off, man. A four handicap. He's got Jessica Biel. He can sing. He can dance. He can act. He's got all kinds of money. I just kind of wonder at this point if there's anything that guy can't do.
Yeah, I know. And he just had probably one of the better Super Bowl commercials, actually. I'm sure you've done enough talking to the Super Bowl. And I don't necessarily want to relive it, having been on the Falcons. But, he is a charismatic guy and very talented. I've seen him before in concert. I mean, you know, I'm like, I just want to be able to do one of those things, you know, and I'd be very happy with it.
Yeah, me too, for sure. Let's move on down the board that you got here. You got a guy at 32-1. We're going with Captain America, Patrick Reed. That really doesn't surprise me that you put him on the card here because, for one thing, he's not an overly long hitter, so this is a course that, you know, plays pretty well to his strengths. And also, given how he embraced the Ryder Cup, and I mean, he was an infectious personality there, an event like this isn't going to faze him at all.
No, and I think if you look at we kind of go back to the weather a little bit. Patrick Reed has won on some tough conditions. If you look at some of his wins, if you remember back 2014 at Doral when guys were struggling to break par. I mean, when it was playing, that was at the old Trump Doral course in 2014, and because of the weather, guys were really struggling to break par, and he won there. He's got a pretty solid record here in terms of his finishes. Last 4 years here, 7th, 13th, 29th, and 6th. So he's got a pretty solid base here. Plays pretty well on the coast at Kapalua. Has played well in Europe and in European style weather. The Ryder Cup at Glen Eagles was 12th at Troon last year at the Open Championship. So he's a guy that I think is a little bit under the radar this week, even though he's the world-ranked number 10th player in the official world golf rankings, but he's a guy that I think people may overlook a little bit this week with some bigger names in the field, with Phil in the field and Brant Snedeker, who obviously has an outstanding record here, with Jimmy Walker, who's won here before, and then, of course, Johnson, Spieth, and Day at the top of the markets, and John Rahm actually is priced lower than him, who just got his first win 2 weeks ago. So I think this might be a guy people are overlooking here. And I actually, that was a little bit of a theme, I guess, if you want to call it that, with some of the plays I made this week. There's a couple other guys that I had that I thought were overlooked.
I want to jump down the board a little bit, and we could probably backtrack to what I think are a couple of those guys that you're talking about. I want to go to JJ Spaun. This is a guy that not many people have really heard of. He's actually 100-1 here to win this event this week. A lot of these are first-time events for him because he's a new guy in the PGA Tour. But he's playing really, really well.
He was a guy that qualified last year in the Web.com Tour Finals. And is really just putting some solid finishes together, two top tens the last 2 weeks, made three or four cuts to start the year, missed the cut at the Sony, and then only tied for 50th at the old Bob Hope, the Career Builder Challenge. But two top tens the last 2 weeks at Phoenix and at Torrey Pines. That's just somebody I included because I just think he's got some good momentum going right now. And sometimes guys, when they get a couple top 10s, top 15s going, sometimes they keep it rolling and you just kind of got to ride them until they inevitably disappoint you and end up finishing tied for 45th or something. But that was just more of a momentum play, and that's the reason why I included Spahn this week.
Spahn, also San Diego State product, and finished ninth at Torrey Pines, so maybe he'll be one of those guys that we can look at here in the early part of the season with these West Coast events. Who are some of the other guys that you've put on your card for this week?
Well, a couple other guys that I was looking at, one being Shane Lowry. I kind of thought he got overlooked here a little bit. He's actually played this event twice, so he's now kind of a veteran. I mean, you usually don't see these European tour guys play a lot of these early West Coast events. Nothing really to script here. Had a 33rd place finish and a 16th place finish last year, but a guy that I think probably is going to embrace the weather conditions where it won't affect him really too early. Actually, on the finishes, he was 21st and 41st. I take that back in terms of Pebble Beach. He's played the last 2 weeks. He was 33rd at Torrey and 16th last week at Phoenix. But he's a guy that I think can play well in this event in terms of he's a good links player, and these aren't necessarily true links courses, but the wind and the rain, I think he'll be okay. He was in the top 10 2 years ago here after 54 holes, and he's finished top 10 at Torrey Pines. So, and his one win over here stateside actually were on slower bent grass and Poa Nua greens at the Bridgestone back in 2015, and then was actually leading the U.S. Open. People forget that, you know, with Dustin Johnson ended up winning fairly somewhat convincingly. People forget Shane Lowry was actually leading the U.S. Open last year in pretty tough conditions at Oakmont. So he's a player that I kind of like to bet. You usually get, I think, fair prices on him. So Lowry is a guy I took. I did take Kuchar at 44-1. People, I think, are afraid to bet Kuchar. He ended up finishing in the top 10 last week. I think people are afraid to bet him because he comes up short often on Sunday. But I think that this is a good setup for him. And then a few of the longer shots that it may behoove people to take. If you don't want to take them to win, maybe taking them in terms of like a top 20 or a top 10. Greg Owen is a guy that usually goes pretty well here. Sung Peng shot the course record last year at Monterey Peninsula, shot a 60. Jonas Blixt, Cameron Smith, those are guys that I think Matt Jones is another one that would be on the radar if you're looking at somebody kind of in the triple digits to one to win, and guys that would probably be maybe anywhere from 10 to 20 to 1 to get in the top 20. I think those are guys I was kind of combing through that are worth looking at.
A lot of excellent insights today from Wes Reynolds. You can follow him on Twitter at Wes Reynolds and the number one. I'm sure he'll have up some matchup props here as well for this thing. But Wes, thank you so much for joining us, man. We'll talk to you again next week.
No problem, Adam. Always a pleasure.
Some good stuff there. Taking a look at the Pebble Beach Pro-Am. Of course, it's a very fun tournament to follow Golf Channel and CBS here this week as we get to watch some of the amateurs right there alongside the pros, and probably a dream come true for some of those guys that get to play with some of the best in the world. As I said at the top of today's program, coming up on our Thursday show, our 90-minute mega show, Brad Powers of BradPowersSports.com, Ralph Michaels of WagerTalk.com, then Jay Primetown from MMAOddsBreaker.com with a look at UFC 208. So thinking we got a lot of good stuff on today's show. I know you heard a lot of me, but I kind of like that mailbag format. Maybe it's something I'll try to incorporate a little bit more often here. But if you ever have questions at any time, you can reach out to me on Twitter at Skating Tripods, or you can ask the official at Bang the Book Twitter account. And we'll definitely have those discussions here on the show. So do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody, and I will talk to you again tomorrow.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah. Oh.
Sorry, we were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.